With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Desert Isolation Discs with me, Alex Lawson. Today, my guest is Tom Bonnet, a dear friend of mine who I've known for many years now, whose passions range from cycling to music to DJing and radio, and whose life has taken him throughout the UK from Cambridge to Sheffield to now London. Over the next half hour or so, we'll be talking through some of Tom's favourite records and talking about his life and his relationship with that music. Tom, lovely to see you. What relationship have you had with music throughout your life? It seems like it's been incredibly important.
Yeah, I think it's been hard for me to get away from it, really, because my mum is a huge music fan. So for as long as I can remember, it's always been something that's been on in the house, but it's also always been something which is a completely normal subject of conversation to discuss and to get excited about.
And what are your kind of earliest memories of music being on around you in the house?
One that started early, that carried on and still does carry on, is whenever my mum puts up the Christmas tree, she'll always listen to the same album. And it's Atlantic Rhythm and Blues, 1967 to 1969. And it was an incredible 2 years. It's got Aretha Franklin's R.E.S.P.E.C.T. It's got Land of a Thousand Dances by Wilson Pickett. It's got Knock on Wood, Mustang Sally. It's just brilliant.
So that's Christmas in your house. That's the sound of Christmas for you.
Yeah, that's the album that gets me really excited about Christmas. Even now, I'm not, often not actually there when this happens now because of the time when you put a Christmas tree up. I haven't gone home yet, but I always get a phone call or a text from my mum saying, listening to Atlantic Rhythm and Blues, putting the Christmas tree lights up, it's looking good. And I think, yeah, I'm going to go home and I'm going to see the same metallic red saxophones that hang and violins and things that are quite odd baubles. And always the spray cobwebs as well.
Fantastic. Well, I think we're about ready for your first piece of music. You've ended up in the desert after a hang gliding accident, which thankfully you weren't injured in. But you're alone in the desert, and you've got all the food and water you need. But you have to have those records. And what's the first record that you got for us today?
The first record is by Elan Mailer, and it's called Elvis Presley Blues. It's a cover of a track by Gillian Welsh of the same name. And Elan Mailer is a pianist who was playing in, I think, maybe Switzerland. And I first heard about it from Giles Peterson, who said that he was staying in the hotel and Elan Mailer was playing piano in the hotel bar or restaurant. And he saw him one night and thought he was great, but he'd had a few drinks. So he went back the next night just to check whether he was still good without having had a few drinks. And he thought it was brilliant. So he talked to him and they ended up putting out an album on Brownswood. And for me, this is the highlight.
That was Elvis Presley Blues by Elan Mailer. Tom, quite a somber song. Are you going to be quite down in your desert setting, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know about down. When I was putting together the tracks for this, I kept thinking about the type of mood that the music that I chose would put me in. And I pretty much decided that all of the tracks that are slightly mournful and slightly sad seem to be the ones that really, really affect me. But what I love about it is that it's quite a somber track, but it makes me so, so happy and almost kind of clears my mind a bit and de-stresses me. And I could listen to that track over and over and over again, and I think I'd be happy. So it was an easy choice.
Tom, you mentioned your mum putting up the tree for Christmas just then. Can you tell us about your childhood? You grew up in Cambridgeshire.
Mm-hmm. Kind of hard to know where to start with that one in a way. I think my childhood was an active child. I was always kind of out either on my bike or playing football or just going out and about with friends and that sort of thing. I think one of the most sort of interesting things about my childhood was that I have a sister which is 5.5 years older than me. And throughout my childhood, we never spoke very much, as I'm sure a lot of siblings sort of don't. But it was not just, oh, we don't really chat because we don't really get on, but actually we talk all the time. We just sort of didn't really talk at all. And I think that probably added to my love of music in a way, because I'd sort of go and squirrel away with like computer games or just whatever when I was in the house, and I'd always have music that was soundtracking that.
How conscious were you that that wasn't perhaps what other people did?
I had a really, really good friend that was an only child, and you know, I think he probably did do quite a lot of that, and I don't think it was necessarily unusual what I was doing, because I was, you know, playing like Dave Mirra Pro BMX and listening to like the same CD over and over again or whatever, and I had mates around a lot of the time when I was doing it. I was always with mates, but it was probably the extent to which that I was doing it, listening to music and trying to find new music and that sort of thing, and I think actively searching for it, I never would have called it, but like crate digging or whatever at that age, you know, whether it was through BMX videos that I watched that always had amazing soundtracks, whether it was through things I saw on TV, I was always just interested in what was on the horizon that I didn't quite know about. And I'd just see a little bit of something, like my parents would always get the paper and there'd be the guide that would have like the gig listings, and it would quite often have music on the cover. Yeah. And I was kind of not necessarily old enough to properly read it, but I'd always sort of skim it and then be like, oh, they look interesting or whatever. And then I'd sort of stumble across things like that, which perhaps some of my friends, they weren't doing, you know, they weren't really looking out for new things in the same way.
And how did that relationship with your sister develop into your adult life?
She moved to Mallorca when she finished university at the age of 21. Until recently, I mean, before she left, we had always had a perfectly kind of congenial relationship, but never a personal one. When she left, I think that we both would find that when she would come back at Christmas and that sort of thing, we became allies and would actually also find that we got on quite well, and we, you know, had plenty to talk about and could have quite a lot of fun together. And now it's great when she comes back, because we'll, you know, we can go to the pub together and she gets on well with my friends and that sort of thing. So it's such a classic example of, oh, well, you won't get on when you're younger, but when you grow up, you'll probably get on really well. And that, you know, that there's a lot of differences between me and my sister as well. You know, don't get me wrong, we're massively different people, but we just get on well now. This is great.
And what's the next piece of music you've got for us?
The next piece of music that I've got is, after the somber first track, I want to go for... Actually, it is quite somber, so I was going to try and have a bit of a change of direction, but no. This is by Ken Booth, the soulful reggae singer, and it's a track called Memories. And what I love about this track is it's produced by Nani the Observer, and it's got a really, really nice kind of swinging, almost pendulum-like top end on it that swishes back and forth across it, on top of a really tough beat. And it's also just got a kind of haunted darkness throughout it that I love.
Memories by Ken Booth. Fantastic track there, Tom. And you were talking about getting into music and these new things coming over the horizon. Can you remember when that started to really gather pace and you started sort of getting involved in the Cambridge music scene as it was?
I think the first gig that I went to proper, there may have been gigs before it, but if there were, I can't remember. Was at the Cambridge Boat Race, which was a classic of the day toilet circuit venue that loads of the university students would go to, and would have big bands kind of coming through just before they made it to the sort of 1,000, 2,000 capacity venues. So, for example, when I was just starting college, so like 2000, I guess, the Libertines came through there, which I actually had a ticket for, and I'd simultaneously at a night, a different night, which I'll go on to talk about, called Organics, I'd met a girl there, and it turned out that the kind of freshers prom, I suppose it was, for college, for their college, she wanted me to go with her, and I wanted to go with her because I'd just met her, and you know, that was good, but it was on the same night as the Libertines, and I had to kind of make this decision between the two, and I've never quite decided whether I made the right decision or not by not going to see the Libertines. Luckily I saw them again at Brixton Academy, and it was an amazing gig, which I think was about a year later. But yes, so anyway, back to the subject of the boat race, I think my first gig there was a band called Miss Black America, who
remember them.
They were quite an interesting one to see, because I think that they were the last of the sort of indie bands in their truest sense, I would say. And they were quite sort of, they were quite feminine and wore sort of leopard skin shirts and had a bit of eye makeup and might have looked like they sort of could have been in The Cure at one time. And you know, they were in sort of similar worlds that Idlewild inhabit and people like that. And they were really good fun and they had really good songs. And I think I was in year nine when I went to see them and managed to get served, and that sort of made me realise the potential of going out, really. Obviously, the music was great as well. And then from there, I started going to the boat race quite regularly. And also a venue called The Junction. Saw the Flaming Lips with my gigging buddy, Georgia, as she became. I saw lots of good stuff with her. Flaming Lips at The Junction was really, really good. We also got tickets for The Strokes when they played. And then there was a sort of wave of indie bands that came along all at the same time, like The Vines and The White Stripes and lots of acts like that that fitted into the same sort of sound. We went to see as many of those bands as possible. But then when I kind of got into my, I suppose as soon when I got to college, my taste started widening a little bit. And the night that I mentioned before, Organics, was a hip-hop night, and I started going to that.
Because, and, you know, your traditional view of Cambridge would not be that it would have this cutting-edge hip-hop night in it. You know, how unusual was it that that was launched, or had it been, was it established?
The night was quite unusual. I can't really pinpoint why it was, other than that I know that the main DJ studied at Anglia Polytechnic University, which is the Polytechnic Uni in Cambridge, and he'd done music production there and got together with some people that lived in Cambridge to put that on. But they were quite a good act, the Delegates of Culture in their own right, but they were just brilliant at booking up and coming acts and great at putting on parties that played underground music but also were hugely entertaining to go to.
Fantastic. Tom, what's your next piece of music you've got for us?
So the next piece of music is a track from that era, actually. It's by Roots Maneuver and it's called Movements, and it's the live version, which was released on Ninja Tune's Zen Cuts compilation. I picked it not only because I think it's a really, really fantastic track lyrically, musically, but because it was a huge turning point in my listening, because I think when I discovered this track around the same time as I started going to Organics, I think I just discovered a whole new world of music, really, with hip-hop that led me onto electronic music and into world music and into territories that I'm still yet to find.
The light man said stay in the light. So, we stay. Alrighty, okay. This is a little ditty that we refer to as the movement. Movements of the mind mass. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Roots Fire Discotheque. On the turntables we have DJ MK, Kilburn's Finest. And on the microphone, Roderick Maneuver. All the way from the southwest, with time to get off my chest.
That was a live version of Movements by the legendary Roots Maneuver. Tom, after you've grown up through this Cambridge music scene, you've moved up to South Yorkshire, to Sheffield, to study journalism. How did that come about, and how did you find that experience?
I remember quite specifically having to make a decision at secondary school and thinking about the subjects that I was going to take and what I wanted to do. And I didn't really think I wanted to do journalism, but I really, really loved BMX magazines, and I would have killed to have worked for one. And I just thought, right, these are the subjects that I can take that are going to enable that. So I did them, and then developed that sort of through sixth form. But, and then when I actually got to Sheffield and I did a journalism course, I'd actually wanted to do a media production course, and had kind of had my arm twisted a little bit to do a journalism course. And I thought that was fine, but then I had a little bit of a shock when I went for the kind of open day, and the person that led the course was a sort of incredibly grumpy, quite seemed to me horrible person that told us how hard it was going to be for the next 3 years and how most people would do a few lectures a week, whereas we would be in 9 to 5 either in the room writing or out on the streets getting copy and all this. And I sort of started to think, I'm not shy about putting the work in, but is this the love of culture and arts, and am I going to really get out of this what I want? Mm. But I obviously didn't form those thoughts well enough in my adolescent brain to be able to think maybe I should go and do the media production course. And so I kind of found myself starting come September, and then quite quickly realised that I probably should have read a newspaper before I went.
What's your next piece of music?
The next piece of music that I'm going to play is by Smog, and it's called Hit the Ground Running.
I had to leave the country. Though there was some nice folk there. And now I don't know where I'm going. All I know is I'll hit the ground running.
That was Hit the Ground Running by Smog. I'm here with Tom Bonnet. Tom, you were just talking there about your fledgling career in the media at university. And then you moved down to London and you've worked for some of the biggest organisations in broadcasting, Sky News, UKTV and the BBC. How have you found walking into these organisations, and has it changed your perception of how news and broadcasting is put together?
It's quite a difficult question. I think, has it changed my perception? I think that having worked at Sky News, the ability to have an idea for a new project, can be turned around in an incredibly short space of time. And when they need to pull in the resources to do that, whether it's refreshing a website, whether it's building graphics that show that act as a tribute wall for soldiers killed in Afghanistan, or incredible coverage of the US or the UK elections, they can really, really supply the cash and the manpower, essentially, to do quite amazing things, and that's why they win award for innovations in that sense. And I think it's much slower at some other companies.
And so you retrained at Goldsmiths to specialise in radio. What is it about radio that attracts you and that you enjoy as a medium?
I think what really attracted me to working in radio is the music on one hand, because I really, really love a lot of the BBC's music radio output. But also, I was working in a breaking news environment when I was at Sky, and it meant that you would quite often be working in a reactive sense, and a story would happen that you weren't necessarily an authority on, and that you would have to quickly get up to speed and write about it. And it was great fun. It was really good, but you sometimes kind of wished you could have a second go at it, and actually really do a bit of kind of good analysis or get a bit more in depth. And so I wanted to essentially work on longer form programming, and I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so the idea of being able to really sculpt programming and features was something that hugely appealed, and also a move into less news, more current affairs.
Fantastic. And what's the next piece of music you've got for us, Tom?
The next piece of music that I've got is Tom Waits with a track called Swordfish Trombones, which is the title track from the album Swordfish Trombones, which was released in about 1985, I think.
Tom Waits there, a classic. Tom Bonnet, so we've talked about your relationship with music, and it's evolved in recent years. You've actually become quite the DJ. How have you sort of developed that skill, and how do you find getting behind the wheels of steel?
I have developed it in a bit of an odd way, because I have found an inability to stick to one genre of music. So I've sort of often kind of dipping into bits of house and bits of world music and bits of techno. And I think that is from DJing with other people quite a lot as well. And so, yeah, you play with people that have got slightly different tastes to you, maybe like sort of more heavy techno and dubstep than kind of disco and house or whatever, and you end up buying tunes that will kind of go quite well with what they're playing, and vice versa. And I think having always kind of done it with friends has been quite an influence, and I've just sort of slowly kind of been working out what my style is. It's taken me about, I don't know, it's taken me years to kind of actually settle on something, but I might be there by the time I'm 40.
So what are you going to play for us next?
The next track is going to be one that I used to DJ when I first got my decks, actually, and a track that I still love because it reminds me a lot of Lucy, my girlfriend. And it's by Matthew Deer, and it's a track called Don and Sherry. And this is a version by Hot Chip, which features Alexis Taylor singing instead of Matthew Deer. And it's a bit of a cheat, really, because it means that I can take not only Matthew Deer, but also Alexis Taylor to the desert island with me.
One of Tom's DJing choices. Now, Tom, you know, as you alluded to there, you like to be surrounded by people. You've always come across as a very convivial person. Has that always been the case? And what do you enjoy about the company of others?
It's a funny one, that, actually. I think there's a bit of a paradox that goes on because I remember doing a kind of a training course as at UKTV. They liked sending you on training courses, and I liked signing up for training courses because I always found them quite interesting. And there was one that they talked about the idea of the introvert and the extrovert. And the extrovert would essentially recharge their batteries by spending a lot of time with other people. And they were on their own, then they'd start feeling quite flat and they'd get a bit bummed out and, you know, they wouldn't really feel very good. Whereas the introvert would spend some time with people, would be fine, but then if they didn't get any time to themselves, and they wouldn't be able to recharge their batteries. I've definitely fallen into that category. So, but it doesn't take very long, though. I can be kind of all grumpy and be like, oh, I really wanted to do something that's a bit productive and on my own and do this. And then I'll sort of do it for about 45 minutes and be like, right, where is everybody?
We'll leave you on your own for a little bit after the recording then, Tom.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And what's the next piece of music you've got for us?
The next song that I've chosen is one that is quite an emotional song for me, so why not? Hey, you're gonna take 8 tracks to a desert island, you might as well take the ones that are gonna bring back a lot of interesting memories. So it's a track by LCD Sound System and it's called Someone Great.
To your final piece of music, but first, how do you think you would find the experience of being stranded in the desert? You know, it's actually, you know, a fairly idyllic place to be where you've actually ended up, and you've got your music there. But how are you, quite a dexterous character? Do you think you'd be able to fend for yourself in the desert?
It's kind of hard with a desert, isn't it? Because if it's like, you know, a desert island, you think, oh, it's going to be really green, so I'm going to make this amazing shack and I'll channel all the rainwater down and get a really nice water butt made and I'll live off that and then just kick it and it'll be really nice, go for a swim and catch some fish or whatever. The desert, I mean, it's You really need
but
some.
It's a nice desert, Tom. It's supposed to be a pleasant experience for you.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Whoops. I think I'd be all right. I think what I might do is, if it was kind of searingly hot in the day, I'd do what they have done in parts of Australia and build a network of underground tunnels that I could live in and I could go down into when I needed some shade and just chill out there. Mm.
Perfect.
Ride some camels upstairs.
Well, I'm liking to see this burrowing network of caves. It sounds that does sound quite dexterous. So what's the final track that you've got for us today?
This is Lord Tanamo with I'm in the Mood for Love.
I'm in the mood for love, simply because you're near me. Funny, but when you're near me, I'm in the mood for love. Heaven is in your eyes, brighter than stars you're under. Oh, is it any wonder I'm in the mood for love?
So, Tom, you've picked your 8 tracks. First of all, if you could only keep one of them, which would it be?
It's really hard, but I think the Elan Mailer track, just because, as I said at the start, I could listen to it over and over again. Mm. And I think it could soundtrack any mood.
Mm. And we've given you a couple of luxuries. We give you The Tiger Who Came to Tea and the complete box set of Red Dwarf. What would your other luxury be?
Thanks for those generous presents. My other luxury would be a piano. I'd love to play the piano, and maybe I could learn to play my one record.
Perfect. Tom Bonnet, thanks for letting us hear your Desert Isolation discs. Any comparisons to any radio shows, alive or dead, is purely coincidental and not any copyright infringement.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.